Hello and welcome to Baylor Connections, a conversation series with the people shaping our future. Each week we go in-depth with Baylor leaders, professors, and more discussing important topics in higher education, research, and student life. I'm Derek Smith and our guest today is David Jack. Dr. David Jack serves as Associate Professor of Mechanical Engineering in Baylor School of Engineering and Computer Science. A leading researcher in composites, Jack specializes in areas such as ultrasonic techniques for the non-destructive evaluation of composites, modeling, analysis, and more. His research meets a demand for composite materials that are lightweight, durable, and most importantly to end users in automobiles and airplanes, safer. Jack leads the Material Science Lab at Baylor, Material Science listed as one of five signature initiatives in Illuminate, Baylor's strategic plan. He's busy working on research all summer long. Also, as we start, the new school year is underway, plenty on your plate right now. So, Dr. Jack, thanks so much for joining us. We appreciate your time today.
Thank you very much, sir.
Well, it's good to have you here and to learn more about what you do. I think if we tell people that a lot of what you do helps make products safer, stronger, maybe more cost-effective, more easy to test, those are some things that make sense to people. But a lot of what you do, even to people in the academic world, can be a little mysterious. So we've got some time today to unpack that a little bit. So let's just start with some definitions here for everyone. Composites and materials science. Everyday terms for you, but maybe not for the rest of us. So if you made a new friend at church and they came up to you and said, "What do you do?" How would you describe it and how would you define those?
What do I do? I have fun.
You have a lot of fun.
I have fun every single day of my life. I thank the Lord so much that I get to do exactly, not what I dreamed to do, what I was meant to do. It is truly a joy to do what I do. So what are composites? What are material science? Composites are a combination of materials that when you put them together, hopefully the sum of their parts is better than the individuals. So people play with composites all the time. You paint your house. You paint the wood. You put a latex paint on top of the wood. It soaks into the wood. It becomes a stronger coating. The paint without the wood would fall off. We play with this all the time. Composites are the combination of two or more materials to make them better as the sum of their parts. And that's actually where the material science part gets into it, is studying how different materials interact with each other and how they interact with the world.
So what has the demand for composites looked like historically and now currently? And where is that growth? Where is the drive for that growth coming from?
Well, historically, actually, I guess the origin or the oldest recorded use of composites is actually Noah and his ark. The pitch is actually a polymer, and the wood served as the fiber reinforcement. It was a fiber-reinforced composite structure. So the need for composites has been around for thousands of years. But the use of them has gone up exponentially in the last few decades, especially. As aircraft, we want them lighter. We're moving from aluminum structure. Well, started out as a wood structure, aluminum structure. We're now moving to fiberglass composites. And now the industry is becoming dominated by carbon fiber-reinforced composites. Automotive, it's very prevalent. The more and more advanced cars get, the more we demand as consumers safety, lightweight, fuel efficiency, whether it's a consumer-driven or a government-driven demand. The only way you can get there is by coming up with lighter, stronger, better materials, and those materials are generally not available all by themselves. You have to combine things to get there.
Visiting with Dr. David Jack, Associate Professor of Mechanical Engineering at Baylor. And you mentioned that you're doing what you were meant to do, created to do. Well, when did an interest in something like this, in engineering and making things and solving problems, when do you remember that beginning for you?
I've always loved to solve problems, but I had no idea I wanted to be an engineer. It really wasn't until I was in my late teenage years, early 20s, where I started to go to school. And obviously not high school, of course. I mean, this was before I went to the university. When I went there, I went to Colorado School of Mines. That's when I started asking the questions about, well, what can I do? What is it that I like to do? What's available on campus? I did not go to campus knowing what my major is going to be. I spent a full year figuring that out. And basically it boiled down to I loved really small things. I loved really complex things. And I loved to build things. And as I started to ask around, it seemed like a hybrid between engineering and physics, and I love sitting at the precipice between those two fields.
Well, you're helping build things at Baylor, both literally in your field and also programs and labs and things of that nature that we're going to talk about more as the program goes on. But Dr. Jack, I want to learn more about your lab and what takes place in there. But I want to ask you, obviously, as we mentioned, material science is one of the five initiatives in Illuminate. That means it's an area of strategic investment for the university. What are some of the possibilities inherent in that? And what is it about, I think you painted this picture a little bit already, but more specifically, that demand for advancements in material science that makes that such a key area?
Well, what makes it absolutely essential is as we move forward in society, industrial demands, government demands, safety demands, they're all looking for advancements in something to get there. And if you start looking at the grand challenges, so these are lists compiled by professional engineers, by the National Science Foundation, most of the grand challenges all center around materials. Now, this is a very diverse field, of course, and we're working in one small set of it within the lab, but across Baylor's campus, we're working in many different areas in material science. So we already had sort of a core nucleus built up here at the university. But it's really, if you want to make big advances, the majority of those big advances are in desperate need of material science. So if we want to have an impact on the world, if we want to show Baylor has a place at the table in the discussion as we go towards this R1 direction, you need to be in a place where you can be making those changes.
Visiting with Dr. David Jack, and a lot of those big advancements start probably pretty humbly in a lab somewhere with an idea. And you've got a lab at BRIC, the Baylor Research and Innovation Collaborative. And I know it's grown over the years since you got here. It wasn't then what it is now. But could you take us on a little mental tour of your lab, what we would see, and if we just knocked on your door in the middle of the day, what we might find you doing there?
Probably the first thing you'd see is you couldn't get to the door because there'd be four or five people waiting to get into the door. It's a very active place. There's a lot of student researchers, a lot of questions being answered, a lot of activity. And I basically walk in the morning looking forward to a day-long conversation. We're always discussing, always working. And so what that means is it's really hard to walk to the door. You usually have to, I don't want to say wait in line, but there's a conversation going on outside the door. There's a conversation going on inside the door. Some of the grad students are mentoring some of the undergraduate students. It's a very busy place. But as you walk through the different labs, I kind of jokingly call it a toy land. Not everybody thinks of it as a toy land, but there are toys for engineers all over the place. Whether we burn things, break things, snap things, measure things, look at things, we're playing with stuff to learn how these materials work better and better. And so as you walk in, you'll see a lot of hoses, a lot of whirring things, a lot of LEDs. But really what's going on is a lot of the infrastructure is in place to really understand at the most basic level what these materials are and how that impacts their macroscopic or their big scale.
Is there one of these cool tools that's a favorite of yours, or is it hard to narrow it down?
It is very hard to narrow it down. That will probably change by the week. Mm-hmm. It kind of depends on the specific research topic we're looking at that moment. One week it'll be we have a scanning electron microscope. We actually have a tensile stage inside it, so we can watch things break down at the micron or submicron level. That's a very unique piece of equipment. One of the ones we've been having a lot of fun with is a very basic tensile test machine. We found some ways to do some imaging using ultrasound and also through some optical methods to really understand how materials are breaking and how they're damaging. We also really have a lot of fun with the bird strike cannon. We do a lot of work for the FAA in understanding how to make aircraft safer so that when we're flying, the risk of a collision with a bird in flight doesn't affect the passengers on the plane or the pilots on the plane.
Visiting with Dr. David Jack from Baylor Mechanical Engineering. And Dr. Jack, that's something maybe a lot of people don't know, is just how much, as they're flying on an airplane, traveling somewhere, work done to make that safer actively is taking place out there at the BRIC. You mentioned the bird strike cannon. Why don't you paint a picture of that for us?
So it stems from a requirement through the FAA that essentially any component in an aircraft that can be hit by a bird in flight has to sustain that impact. Mm-hmm. And there's a standard. We're engineers. We come up with numbers. It must be a 4-pound bird or greater. It must be 80% cruise velocity. But the point is, you have to know with absolute confidence that if a plane hits a bird in flight, the plane is not going to crash. You're not going to injure people, whether it's on the plane, whether it's on the ground. You're not going to have parts flying off the plane. You have to know with absolute certainty. And at the end of the day, the only way you can do that is you actually have to strike that article, the wing, the fuselage, the cockpit, the nose cone. You have to hit it with a 4-pound bird. And you're hitting it, we're doing in excess of about 400 to 450 miles an hour for some of these shots.
You know, as you talk about that, it just really stresses the fact that you've used the phrase, there's zero room for error, right? Yeah. When you're talking with airplanes and with automobiles, there isn't a margin for error. What's that like? And obviously that's something, as someone who's been in this industry for a long time, that you're comfortable with. But what, in terms of the demands it places on you, in what ways does that impact the processes that you go through and the way you have to approach what you do?
We have to be absolutely rigorous in everything we're working on. And so the students that are doing these projects, they are detail-oriented. They're brilliant. They're great mathematically. They're great scientifically. But they have to have impeccable ethics, impeccable morals, because any small deviation, any laziness, any dishonesty of any kind, the consequence literally is people's lives. Bluntly. Mm-hmm. And so you have to be diligent in everything you do. And that means we're practicing a lot. We practice what we do multiple times before the real data set is collected. So we might go through months and months of testing to prepare for a test that only takes, well, instance of the bird strike cannon, it occurs in about 4 milliseconds.
Wow. Mm-hmm.
5 milliseconds. I mean, this is a fast event, but it's months of preparations for every one of these.
This is Baylor Connections. We are visiting with Dr. David Jack, Associate Professor of Mechanical Engineering in Baylor University School of Engineering and Computer Science. And Dr. Jack, as you get involved with the aerospace industry, the automobile industry, what does that look like? How do those partnerships and those contacts come together from the academic to the business world?
One way is the BRIC itself. The Baylor Research Innovation Collaborative is a phenomenal facility. It's got academics on one side of the building. It's got industry partners on the other side. And the model is that the technology from the labs is being pushed to the industrial partners, but at the same time, the industrial partners are driving what's being done in the labs. So we actually have multiple partnerships with several different companies inside the BRIC. Delta G is one of them. Berkman Coe is another one. We've been working with L3Harris for almost a decade now. And these are partners who help guide the needs of industry to let us know. And at the same time, we're interested in certain problems. So we find the areas where we have an overlap, where the things we're interested in are also beneficial to the needs that they see, both now and into the future.
You know, I know a lot of what goes on at the BRIC, and certainly throughout all of Baylor University, is interdisciplinary. And being there at the BRIC, the work that's being done with industry, it's not just you, it's other people as well. What does that look like in terms of maybe being able to invigorate even more conversations or opportunities when you've got people in other disciplines that you can bounce ideas off of?
It's a wonderful thing to you're walking into the hall to go to the drinking fountain, you're coming in from the morning, you're going for a meet on campus. You crisscross paths. It's just the close proximity makes it very comfortable, very convenient. You know that if you have a strange question on tip-enhanced ramen, why the world experts are on the first floor, which isn't a great walk for me on the second floor. And mm-hmm. So I can go down and talk to them. I can throw up a question in the air. And then sometimes they go, well, I don't have the answer, but I know who does. They're around the corner. And so you real quickly find the group or the individual that may be able to explain something to you. And so the close proximity is amazing, but we're all focused on trying to find applications of our research that are industrially relevant.
Visiting with Dr. David Jack here on Baylor Connections. And what does it look like if for every part that's in an airplane, what's the work look like? You know, obviously you can't tell the whole thing, but in a nutshell, what is the work that has taken place to get us one part or, you know, one composite, what have you, one air composites in that plane?
Years mm-hmm. of work. you first have to qualify the material you're going to use. The qualification for a material is you have to essentially test underneath any possible circumstance the plane could be subjected to. You have to know that material well enough that you can predict its behavior before you test it. So that means you've tested it before you've tested it, in a way. So there may be a whole bunch of front-end work of just knowing what the material system is and what that material system, how it will respond, so that when you finally go to qualification, that you're ready to go. So there might be several months, years, invest in that. That doesn't even involve what's the structure you're building it into. That's just the qualifying the material. The structure is the same issue. You have to know how it will respond, because when you finally do a test for the FAA, you don't mess up. You have to know the answer before you go in. And so what that means is the final test is almost a formality, because everybody knows the answers before you walk in. But that shows the level of requirements for this, the precision necessary. So a single part in a single airplane, it could be months to years, depending on how much it deviates from a previous part.
I understand if we went into your office, we'd see rows and rows of binders in places, and maybe a dozen of those binders might represent just one part.
Yeah, that is true. There's a lot of paperwork whenever you fabricate a part. Every person who touches it, whether it's the material, whether it's the tooling, whether it's the machine that makes it, you're qualifying everything in the entire process. There is no room for any guesswork. That everything has to be known. And so just the paperwork required, it is pretty extensive. And that's actually one of the things we're working on with our ultrasound, is to see if there's a way we can sort of shortcut some of that paperwork when we're trying to qualify parts. Can we sort of leapfrog over several processes, because we can actually see the results after the fact and know what we actually have, instead of having to predict and qualify that prediction?
Well, you mentioned that, Dr. Jack. What is the impact, and what is the impact of, and really what is that non-destructive ultrasound idea?
What it allows us to do is to go in and look at a part and qualify that actual part. So right now there's really only one good solid method for getting a part approved. You have to go in and test multiple other parts. And when you test them, you take them all the way to failure. So if I want one part on an airplane, I may have broken 5 or 10 parts to get there. The idea is the part you make, we can test it using ultrasound or other non-destructive testing techniques, and then qualify that part right on the spot. So now you're reducing the number of parts. It's also really helpful on the quality control side, so that you can come in and qualify what you made is what you planned. And so it really, the idea is it's reducing part counts, it's reducing manufacturing time, and it's also helping on the back end, so that we can come in and look at damaged parts and show where the damage is and where you need to repair them.
And then to pinpoint that more easily and more inexpensively. This is Baylor Connections. We are visiting with Dr. David Jack. And Dr. Jack, you came to Baylor a little over a decade ago. And Dr. Walter Bradley, longtime Baylor faculty member, really a legendary Baylor faculty member, as he hired you, he talked about the fact, I guess he predicted back then, that Baylor would be on an R1 path. But it wasn't at that point then. How have you seen that grow over the years, and what's it meant to you to see us grow into this position where now that R1 push has become a reality?
That was one of the drivers, was being at a Christian university that was moving into a doctoral program for engineering. And as I recall, I believe we're the first Protestant university to have a PhD in engineering. But seeing that path was being laid out a decade ago, that's come to fruition. But the reason why you go for a PhD program in engineering is so then you can make the next step to an R1 or a top-tier research university. And so just to see that path has been absolutely amazing. It's been very focused. There have been a few little areas where we learned along the way about how to invest things and maybe do things a little different, but the trajectory has always been the same. We've always been moving upward, always moving towards that, getting closer and closer.
What is unique to you about being in a place where your faith and top-tier work can come together?
I don't have to feel a mental boundary. The conversation has no limits. Whether we're 1 minute we're talking about some weird subtle nuance of a micro crack inside of an advanced material, immediately that conversation will morph over to what's going on in your life. Are you getting the help you need? Are you in a good community? And then you go right back to talking about the science. And then we talk about faith, and it's actually been a great conversation. So the students, they come from a very diverse background, but they're very free to have a conversation. We're not limited by discussions of not just the world here, but the world beyond.
Visiting with Dr. David Jack from Baylor Mechanical Engineering. And obviously, you mentioned that coming here to Baylor, you know, faith played a role. Obviously, the R1 push played a role. For people who maybe aren't as plugged into to research as you and some of your colleagues, what would you tell people about why it matters that Baylor's moving in this direction specifically? As you mentioned, you know, you're seeing things like a PhD program that Protestant universities don't have except for Baylor. And obviously that's a good thing, but the broader push, why is that important?
It's important because right now there's not a strong voice in the world in this area. We have almost given up that seat at the table, the Protestant universities across the country. They haven't turned around and said, we want to be part of the conversation. We want to drive the discussion. We want to solve the grand challenges, the big problems. I mean, that alone is something to think about, is the impact that a university like Baylor can have. We're going to have a seat at the table. We have a seat at the table. We're going to get a bigger seat as we keep moving forward.
This is Baylor Connections. We are visiting with Dr. David Jack. And Dr. Jack, final question now. As you look ahead, whether it's you and your colleagues across all of Baylor in the R1 push, or you and your specific work with your students, obviously there's a lot to be excited about in the work you're doing. But on the horizon, what are you most excited about right now?
That's a great question. I think the thing that I'm most excited about is as our students graduate, we are putting into the world engineers with a Christian foundation who are going to be the leaders of the next level of technology, the next level of industry. These young men and women are going to be changing the world, and they're going to be changing the world from a Christian perspective, and they're going to be changing it to strengthen it in a way that I don't know if you could even quantify. It's absolutely phenomenal to see even the students who've graduated in the last 5 or 10 years, the positions they're already in, they're in the leadership positions, and you can see that changing the industry that they're in.
Well, that's very exciting. Great thoughts, and we'll be excited to see more of that in the years ahead. Dr. David Jack, great to talk to you today. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much.
Dr. David Jack, Associate Professor of Mechanical Engineering, our guest today on Baylor Connections. I'm Derek Smith. A reminder, you can hear this and other programs online at baylor.edu/connections. Thanks for joining us here on Baylor Connections.